All lines are now bridged.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the HITECH's annual report work group. Thank you for joining us. Happy early Thanksgiving to our members and our public members as well. With us today, we have the full team, Carolyn Peterson, Erin Murray, Christina Carballo, and Brett Oliver. With that, I will turn it over to our co-chairs for continued discussion on the gap analysis and recommendation sections of the report.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the meeting, and thank you for making time as you get ready for your Thanksgiving holidays. I think we have some good discussion to have today as we further our progress with the annual report.
Yeah, and good morning to everybody here, and happy holiday week. If you are listening in, thank you for that, because I know everybody is getting busy for the gearing up for the holidays, so thanks for that. This should be a fun conversation. There's been a lot of great work by the ONC team to kind of synthesize our thoughts and our recent discussions into some manageable and easily discernible charts. So I think today will be a good conversation for us to kind of walk through and start really firming up what our recommendations are going to be to go back to the full HITECH. Carolyn?
Hey, hey. So what we have today is meeting schedules. Of course, we always go over that just so we can keep in our heads where we're at. A discussion of proposed topics for the gap analysis and the recommendation sections. We have our public comment and then next steps and adjournment for Turkey. So with that, we could go to the next slide, please. So this is our schedule for our own work group. Today is the 26th, and we have a meeting next month, mid-month, and then look to be presenting the draft of the annual report to the full HITECH in January with the goal of finalizing that and moving on in February. Next slide, please. And then in terms of the full committee, we aren't going to be doing anything with them in December, and then again, we'll have our meetings with HITECH in January and February. Next slide, please. So here's our updated plan. We have taken care of the landscape analysis section and the HITECH progress section, and now we're looking at the gap analysis and recommendation sections today with the goal of looking at the fuller draft hopefully next month, although there will still be some loose ends because we won't quite know what may be happening with the rule and a few other things. The next slide, please. So moving into the discussion of proposed topics, again, looking at our draft outline, we've done the first four items and had a little bit of discussion about number seven, but we're not going to focus on that today. Today we're on the gap analysis and the recommendations. Next slide. So this is slide number eight, our next steps. We're going to be continuing the discussion we had a couple of weeks ago, and then we'll look particularly at a few specific questions for the discussion. I think we're going to start here because we know Brett will need to take off early today. We're looking for some thoughts about particular gap areas like the unique device identifier, data integration, application of international regulations to data exchange in the U.S., and third-party access to health data. Just a couple of notes there. The relevant topics in the draft HITECH plan for 2020 and the related ONC benchmarks for 2019-2020. And we should also be thinking about the proposed tiers. Are we thinking about what is immediately to be done by HITECH or could be done immediately by HITECH? Or topics within a priority target area section. We also might want to think about how many tiers we use to break these things up, you know, what the breakout makes sense, and do we want to recategorize anything? And with that, I will let Brett start the discussion of some of these items. I'm sorry, Brett. Erin, good morning. Like I mean,
Brett, you can have at it. But would it make sense for us to go to the chart, Carolyn, and talk through it there and answer these questions from that?
We could do that. Let's go to the next slides and find that.
Yeah. Page. All right. So So if you guys blow this up.
Thank you.
All right. So does everybody see this, Carol, for Brett and for Christina? Do you see the chart?
Yep.
Okay, perfect. So I think to answer a couple of questions in here and specificity, as the slide deck was saying, when we were looking at this, it's a really good, it's a little busy, but it's a really good synthesization of all of the topics and everything that we've been talking about. And so, you know, two questions came to mind as we were just kind of talking through this openly. One, which is, one, some of these topics are very, very deep and may warrant breaking them up into two parts, right? And when I looked at these things and I was saying, okay, what does it take for, I'm going to make this up, for, you know, the association between EHRs and patient safety? Well, to be able to do that, we really have to be able to answer, you know, unique device identifier integration, because it's the only way you can really figure out how an EHR is, you know, used for a patient, then a med device is put on a patient, and what happened to that patient subsequently. So there's kind of some things here that go in sequence, as well as some things that truly have multiple phases to it. So I guess first generally thinking, is that something we want to do, which is break up some of these topics into like a part one and part two, or should we keep it as one domain that we research? What do you all think? Was my question
your question made a lot of sense, but it's like maybe for one particular topic, it seems like it would make sense to break it down, whereas maybe others, it's better to kind of do the research and accept or take it on broadly.
Got it. Okay. What else?
Yeah, some of these topics could be very, very deep. Even just to lay out all the issues, you could get into a lot of text.
Okay. So are we then more in favor of keeping it as one topical area then versus breaking it up just in general? Because I think we should keep an even format for this whole thing. Otherwise, it may get confusing for people.
Yeah.
What about like a hybrid where you keep them in the topic area, but in some there might have like, I don't know, but as we start formulating the report, we might find that in some of the more complex areas can be broken up, we might prioritize like first, second, third steps or priorities within the topic for the really complex ones.
I see what you're saying. So within the actual topic itself, like break it up into like the different opportunity sections or what the recommendation of activities is. I see what you're saying. Okay. Yeah, that's a way to do it.
That would accommodate the detail too.
Yeah, I like that. As always, Christina's thinking outside the box. Thank you for that. That's a good one. Okay.
Wow. Christina needs more coffee.
All right. So that's a good proposal. I'm sorry, was someone saying something? All right. So next question on there was about the proposed tiers. So this is about the final column that's there. It says like immediate or medium term or whatnot. Do you all agree, just generally speaking, with these types of classifications for this chart? I mean, the majority of these are immediate. And when we say immediate, it means that something that HITECH should go after and address, or we're not really proposing the activity, but we're saying it's a gap right now that's urgent. And then the medium term is something probably that's important, but really does need some of those immediate terms or topics addressed first before we can really tackle the next set of issues. Does that make sense to you all? Is there a different way we should categorize these? Because I don't want anybody misunderstanding that we're not saying something's important. We're just saying there's got to be some sort of logical sequence, and we can't bite off more than we can chew.
Yeah, that's a good point, because when I first looked at this, I did kind of read it as priority, where it's more what we can manage. So it's almost like readiness and long-term.
Right.
Something that we can start tackling now that can make an impact versus stuff that we need to start thinking about that may be more long-term and we might not see results right away. Like just taking one example, we look at the opioid epidemic and its medium. Well, that's obviously a really important topic right now that we're trying to tackle, and it's larger than just in our health IT world. But are we really, how ready are we to support what we know would make the largest impact?
The largest impact on the opioid piece, or
yeah,
I could make an argument for that over price transparency in terms of technically ready. There are some political opponents to getting these PDMPs integrated that the government could make it happen pretty quickly. So I want to be careful how we phrase to the group in January the proposed tiers. If we're saying we are prioritizing, there's only so much we can do, that's one thing. But if we're saying the way we came across that, or how we came up with these proposed tiers is, like, for instance, this opioid one, it's not quite ready, so we're going to put it on medium term, even though we know it's important. I want to be careful that we have the expertise to say that. Does that make sense, what I'm saying? Because I would argue that it's not that particular one would not fall into a medium term by that definition.
That's a good point. That's a good point. And the goal of this was not to try to send a signal that we think something is less important than the other. That is for darn sure. I mean, all these are important topics, and they're all relevant topics. But to your point, we're trying to at least sequence it, right? In some way or another.
But we can at least tell people that there's no one's on the long-term track. I don't know if I missed one
or not,
but I didn't see anything that was
No, nothing is long-term. But we could turn them all to immediate, but the problem is there's no way we can get that done, right? I mean, you know, that's not going to be fruitful, and we won't get the quality work that we've been producing for the past, you know, 12, 18 months or so. So,
I think we just need to define how we got to the criteria. I'm sure the team working on this grid had some criteria when we put in the medium, intermediate, or immediate. And I think we just need a written definition for when we present it to the high tech so that they know how we came up with the buckets, or else it's going to be just around a conversation that is never ending.
That's fair. Okay.
Erin, this is Michelle. Do you want me to speak to that a tiny bit?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, please. I didn't want to put you on the spot, but yes.
No, I wanted to. I was thinking, should I speak up or just send a note? But they're very closely at the moment, very closely related to the draft high-tech plan for calendar year 2020, which was presented publicly in October and then will be updated in January. So the timing's not perfect for this work. We're going to having to accept the public draft that's still being iterated upon. So those could change, is our point. They're not pinned down. And I did put in the footnote, you know, that there is a link there. So that's one criteria for choosing, was it immediate or medium term. And another thing we realized as we worked on this is that they probably need to be tied to the opportunities rather than specific recommended high-tech activities, partly for how it would work inside the paper once you start writing this up. It's easier to group them and keep them at a more general level that way, tied to the opportunities. So those are the two factors that were used in determining whether it was immediate or medium term. And as you notice, we didn't find anything that looked long term under the current time frames that we were given to work with from the work group. And then we realized that maybe there are only two tiers, could be immediate and long term. So you're already kind of getting to where the thought process that happened at ONC.
Right.
That makes a lot of sense.
And part of it is that, you know, that final plan is still coming together. And so I think that plus, like I was saying, we did try, even yesterday on a working call, try to prioritize and categorize these things based on some logic. It is difficult because I think, Brett, you make a good point. We know the opioid crisis is a major thing, and all of us are, especially on the provider side, are experiencing it firsthand. And so, you know, we don't want to send the wrong optics and the wrong signals. That's for sure. Okay, so in looking at this, go ahead.
Yeah, just really quickly, I think presenting it and us thinking through it in this way, Michelle, thank you for that overview. That was really helpful. If we actually are mapping back to the priority areas that have been identified and then coming up with tasks and kind of our recommendations to address those areas, I think that's a really impactful way to present this and kind of a good approach in general.
And this is Michelle again. I'll actually make a point here that a lot of the ideas that you had at the last meeting as a work group that may have be input to the high tech planning process, I wrote up and passed on up to our leadership. So that this is also a way to give some feedback on that planning process.
And this is Seth Stasinski. I'll just add an additional point on to Michelle's. One of the things that's really helpful is clarity on, you know, what exactly the high tech would take on. So a lot of the times we try to, when looking at the potential topics, like understand, is it a clear charge of we're ready to have the high tech look at specific issues and make recommendations, or is it a more we need to have further discussion as a high tech and having some kind of understanding of where it fits in that scope can help determine, like, are we ready to take a first step to do some conversation around it to help, you know, shape the specific, you know, what the specific charge would ultimately be versus something's kind of ripe for, you know, a clear issue and charge, you know, definition and description.
Super helpful, Seth. Thank you. Okay. Other thoughts or ideas about this chart or groupings? Anything here doesn't make sense? And more importantly, is there anything that we feel is missing? Go ahead.
If it seems that the term medium term is confusing, maybe that can be changed to something like later or post 2Q 2019, you know, or something like that, if you want to frame the immediate things as things that we look at more for the first part of the year, and then the other things, stuff that we might consider later on.
That's a good point.
I'm less concerned with the term and more concerned with defining it. So the once Michelle kind of gave an overview of the thought process behind it, I think it's fine. I could go either way, but I think it's just really explaining to people how we the criteria that was used to classify.
Mm-hmm. Brett, I was going to ask you, as a provider, and you're looking at this, for the providers and whatnot that are watching what the high tech is talking about and working through, especially as the various you know, things come out of final go into final ruling. Does this chart make sense if you're just a practicing physician looking at this in terms of what we're doing and why and what we're focusing on? Or is there a different way you would want to see it, just putting your provider hat on?
No, I think it makes sense, Aaron. I think when we, and with this chart, even though these are obviously big areas, to have the challenge and the gap listed, I think that brings it out in terms of what we're talking about. For instance, with the opioid one, saying, you know, the specific gap. Obviously, you can go a million different ways in terms of attacking that, but from our perspective, having limited integration with the PDMPs, that's what we're talking about. So that makes sense. I think from a scientist's perspective, which most of us are, it's, you know, it's laid out nicely.
Yep. Okay.
Kind of one question I had, and I certainly don't want to revisit things, but I see a potential gap that I'm not sure where it fits, and maybe it fits multiple places, and I'd like to get you guys' feedback on it in terms of the data accuracy in exchange, and then what do you do with incorrect data that you identify? For instance, let's say someone comes to the ER, they're seen, their name's John Smith, of course, and we thought we had the right John Smith, but we find out later it was on Jane Smith, his twin sister. and then we're in an HIE or we're exchanging data with other organizations, but we determine that that's inaccurate. What's that correction process look like? Where are we required to notify? Maybe there's laws that I'm just unfamiliar with, but this is one of those things where I was looking at this chart, and then I'm doing something with Epic on a data accuracy steering committee, and I realized we're not talking about that, or at least I haven't heard us talk about what do we do with inaccurate data. There's going to be inaccurate data out there, we know that, but that we identify as inaccurate, because the further it goes downstream, the further the effects could be multiplied, whether it's with research or what have you. Is that a place we could look to add that, or do y'all agree?
Well, I mean, we have that. I mean, we have that first one on interoperability under health information exchange. I mean, that is clearly one of the challenges with, you know, reconciliation of data, right? Is incorrect or inaccurate data, and that could be, you know, a multitude of reasons. Obviously, a lot of it's you misidentified the patient, you put the wrong armband that was scanned. You know, people do the hack, which is put an armband on a cow and they scan that versus scan the patient. I mean, all the zillion things that happen to us, you know, in the course of care. So for me, you could put it under one of these topics without a problem. I think you're spot on, Brett. I agree with you.
Because the patient identification is one thing that's obvious, and I know we've talked a lot about that, both in our work group as well as the Florida High Tech. I was even thinking about, you know, what if something, we have an algorithm within our lab that goes off, and so for a month we have hemoglobins that are off, blood counts that are off, and we figure that out. But in the interim, through Care Everywhere or other information exchanges, other organizations, other providers have gotten that inaccurate hemoglobin. Well, to reconcile it into the chart, I'm not going to know. I get it if a medication comes up and is like, what? It's a male with birth control pills. Like, that's not making any sense. Like, I can clinically reconcile that. What I struggle with is some of the things that I would think would be accurate coming in, a chest x-ray report with the patient's name on it or a lab value. So I just, again, maybe it fits perfectly under there, and I don't want to belabor the point in terms of discussing the topic, but I just wanted to see if you guys felt like that already fit maybe under the HIE section. Did we need to elaborate, or we can just move forward? It's just something that I'm going to have to deal with.
No, it's important. This is my personal sense. It's very important. I think we should maybe specifically call it out under one of these sections. Maybe that goes back to what Christina had suggested, which is, you know, within the actual topic itself, break it into pieces like number one, number two, number three. But I think that is something really important we should call out as to, you know, data inaccuracy in general, right? And what is that reconciliation of data inaccuracy? What does everybody else think?
And you could extend that further and onto the Internet of Things, you know, patient-generated data,
yep,
all that.
Yep. Yep, you're exactly right. Carolyn, Christina?
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I like that.
All right, so we'll look to add that under the HIE piece for right now, but we'll call it out specifically, Brett. I think that's a good point. And, you know, I think it kind of varies organization to organization. I know some organizations that don't do any notification or proactive notification, one, because they often don't realize they're wrong, and two, or they realize it way after the fact when they're having to do corrections of the chart, and then now, you know, create an overlay or something to that effect, or some sort of merge, and it becomes even a bigger mess. But you're right, there should be some, I mean, to me, it's almost a quality and standard of care kind of thing, but it's something we can talk about as a larger group. Okay. Carolyn, what other questions did we have on this chart? Do you recall?
Well, I think there were a few specific topics that we mentioned on the previous slide that we wanted to go into in depth. Other than that, it's just a very, very packed piece document in terms of information density. I don't know if it's worth going through topic by topic and just saying, do we want to have anything to be concerned about on this, or if we would rather, if it would be easier to just tackle it by priority target area. I mean, we could certainly talk for quite a long time, but I don't know that that's necessarily helpful since we've really looked at the topics individually in the past.
Yeah, that's a good point. How about this? Let's look at those three questions. I just pulled the slides again so I could see that. So the first question that we had was the unique identifier, unique device identifier data integration, right? So this would be, if you scroll down, I'm overlooking it right now. Let's see. It is, here we are, page two, like close to the bottom there. And basically, it's that limited unique device identifier integration. Lack of tracking UDIs makes it difficult to track medical device usage. And then, you know, sort of the challenges with adoption of UDI data integration to existing workflows and claims data. And then what we're proposing is to convene a hearing, or I should say proposed, but we talked about it, but sort of this proposed item here is convene a hearing to understand trends related to UDI data integration and what has effect on clinical workflows. I think this is something that keeps coming up, and I keep hearing more about it in conversation and whatnot. What do you all think? Is there other aspects to this that, is the timing make sense? We're thinking that's immediate. Is this important? Brett, do you care as a provider? Like, I'm curious your thoughts on UDI.
I mean, I'm concerned about it from a security perspective probably more than anything. Just keeping track of them and knowing where, if I can't determine where remote patient monitoring data is coming from or it's confusing, then obviously it has clinical impact.
Right.
What about the cybersecurity aspect of things in terms of devices being hacked?
Shut down. It's not been an area that we have seen a ton of activity, but I know, Aaron, you can speak to it better than I. It's an area of great concern.
Oh, it's tremendous concern. I mean, just keeping up with, I give a lot of credit to the major medical device manufacturers. They're trying, and I'm getting more and more bulletins about, hey, we have this patch we got to apply. We have this patch we got to apply. But it's a bit of a hassle because there's no way for me then to go back and reconcile, okay, who all has used this device or who's on it right now. Can I update it? Can I not update it right now? Is it in circulation? I mean, there's a zillion things that, you know, I have to do using the device's MAC address now versus a UDI. So a UDI would help me tremendously, particularly as I go all the way through all of my quality reporting and whatnot. So for me, from a cybersecurity perspective, I think it's critical, but from a quality and efficacy perspective, it's important. I mean, I've seen situations, not in recent time, but, you know, relatively recent time, where you've had malfunctioning devices, right? And it's a clinician who catches it when they're like, oh, this blood pressure reading doesn't make any sense, but the blood pressure cuff was totally broken, and then they had to resort to the manual squeeze blood pressure cuff. It would be great to have UDI to be able to track those things and make sure it gets out of circulation and sent for repairs and things like that.
No, I think you're exactly right, because the practical part of that is that broken blood pressure cuff would just get thrown back into circulation until someone else tries to use it again.
That's right.
And quality controls.
You go to any hospital or any healthcare facility, and you'll see medical devices with a little sticker on them saying, you know, sent to IT repair or sent to Biomed for repair, but they're pushing a corner because clinicians don't want to give up their assets because there's so few of them, right? So if you have UDIs, you help increase the efficacy of these devices and the accuracy, and then to the point of cyber and everything else. I mean, it's a quality issue end of the day. It really is. At least, again, that's the way I see it.
Well, quality, Christine? but also the bigger picture issue of device tracking for adverse event reporting, for trend understanding. I mean, FDA hasn't done a great deal in terms of the unique identifiers and a registry of devices, medical devices largely, but that certainly may come back to be a discussion point as we go forward and get a better handle on cybersecurity problems and think about tracking people who are doing things remotely.
Right, right.
Get into the clinic every 3 months so that the provider can see and notice any issues that the user might not be aware of.
Right. And the other thing is, I mean, now you're able to prescribe a ton of devices to go home with the patient if you wish, right? Whether it's a Proteus, whether it's a Holter device from back in the day, whether it's whatever. I mean, so many of these devices are leaving your four walls, so it's not like I can track it on my Wi-Fi for forever. So I have to have something for it to be trackable when it goes home with the patient, per se.
And, of course, as we do more with telemedicine, you know, there will be more devices that don't come back at all.
Right. Okay, so I'm hearing that we're all in agreement then with this topic and this urgency. Is that right?
Yep, I think so.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, next question on here was the application of international regulations to data exchange in the United States. And this one is...
Page 5.
Thank you. Perfect. All right. So about a third from the bottom there. And so the specific issue is uncertainty about how GDPR applies to data exchange from the U.S. to countries covered under GDPR for services sought in the U.S. So, e.g., I'm a European citizen, say from Germany, I come to the United States, I come to the University of Texas for care from a specialist, I'm seen, I go back to my home country, hey, you know, Texas, I want you to delete, you know, right to be forgotten, I want to be deleted or whatever else, and all the other things that go in from GDPR. How does that work? So the question there is international regulations such as GDPR may require U.S. healthcare organizations to comply with additional privacy laws outside the U.S. legislation. And then so what we're looking to here is sort of increased knowledge of the impact of international regulations. We're thinking to identify educational approaches that offer increased transparency for international regulations such as GDPR. And does this also go into then the data privacy and secondary uses of data, including GDPR? But given the complexity and the relevancy of these laws now becoming finalized and becoming even more strict, especially like if you look at countries like Germany and France and others, you know, we're thinking that this is more of an immediate item. But what do you all think? Is this something that we should care about right now? Is it something we should focus on? Is it something to do immediate versus midterm? What do you all think?
I think we're seeing an increase in dialogue around this topic, and it's something that is going to become more and more important. It might be somewhat narrowly focused. I'm not sure. I think like the just broader topic of interoperability across different countries and globally is important. There's a new council that was formed. It's the Joint Initiative Council, and it's a, I'm not exactly sure when it formed, but it's looking at global health informatics standards. And it is an international initiative, and some of the big players on it include, I think HIMSS, definitely the Personal Connected Health Alliance, IHE, HL7, ISO, SNOMED, DICOM, and some others. So I do think that this is a good topic to include.
Good point. Very good point.
Yeah, I think it's a good topic. I also think that the answers are out there. We just need someone to help define them. You know, it's not like we're going to go create a new technology. We just need whether legal minds and compliance folks to help outline these educational pieces. Maybe that's naive. Maybe they don't exist, but it seems like we just need the right people to answer these questions. And I think with, to Christina's point, it seems like a month doesn't go by that I don't see an announcement that a U.S.-based organization, hospital organization, or healthcare organization is, you know, bought a hospital, bought an organization in Europe or other places that we need to understand that a little bit better.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Go ahead, Carolyn.
No, I was just going to say I absolutely agree with that. And it seems that it just even the term GDPR seems to be coming up more in discussions about what's happening in the U.S., you know, as people kind of realize it really is still out there, even if it's not our law.
Christina, you were saying something?
Yeah, I guess I just have a question. When we're coming up with these priority areas, we had mentioned, you know, what is the high tech going to do? And I'm just trying to formulate what I was going to say. Is this something that the high tech should look at? I don't know the answer, but I guess my question is, are there certain things on this list just generally that we are identifying that we recommend the high tech look at? And then are there certain things on the list that we've identified but may not be a priority for the high tech and we want to label it as a recommendation for ONC to take on or industry or whomever?
That's interesting. We didn't actually discuss that component, which is recommend industry or others. We were looking at it really what should high tech look at, but that's an interesting thought process there. Carolyn, what do you think?
I agree, totally. No reason to be a leader in looking at this.
That is interesting, Christina. So who all would you see, would you say this is something we would recommend that high tech plus HHS look at or whoever else look at as well?
Yeah, I mean, if we've got some things that maybe we might not have the expertise to take on or maybe outside of the scope of what we can do, we could maybe recommend certain things that the high tech could do in this space, but then identify where additional work needs to be supported. And we may or may not define who needs to support that, but at least it gives kind of a more robust overview of what we think needs to be done and where the gaps are. And then a narrow focus on what the high tech is going to do to support like the larger work that needs to be done to get us where we need to go.
Yeah, that's fair. Okay, that's fair. So basically you're saying in a nutshell that we kind of stage this in a way that, you know, there's pieces of it that we would do, there's pieces of it that somebody else would do, and then the combined effort is the resulting net of what we come up with as a solution. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's how high tech is supporting the larger work, larger industry work.
Right.
I don't want to overcomplicate it.
I think you have a good point. This is multifaceted, but I don't know. I'm looking at the coinage as an immediate issue, and I mean I'm beginning to feel it is because of how much data exchange occurs, you know, with, you know, other healthcare institutions, with other countries for research and for clinical operations. Does everybody agree that this is immediate, or is this a medium term issue?
No, I would agree it's an immediate.
Immediate?
Sorry,
okay. Carolyn?
I'm just thinking if we see continued pressure to change HIPAA or to expand it or try to make it applicable to things that have not been traditionally healthcare data, you know, like data from trackers and social media and other stuff that's health related but that hasn't typically been housed in the record, it could be both a medium term and an immediate thing because, of course, once you get the changes, then that will change the relationships and the procedures.
Good point.
It's not like a problem that you solve. It's like an ongoing situation you deal with.
Right. Good point. Okay. All right. So then we will keep the topic, keep the urgency, break the recommendation into a couple of pieces, which is the high tech piece, which we do, and then of course what we recommend to industry to go do, or partnership with, you know, HIMSS, CHIME, AHIMA, whatever, AHA, whatever, and try to get the word out about this. What's interesting is that, you know, all these regulations that are coming down, you know, that really stem from 21st Century Cures and before, it's amazing when I look at the industry and I talk to my peers in the industry how unaware people are. And I think this is one of those topics that is really going to catch people flat-footed if we just don't make people more aware and attuned to, hey, you have to be mindful of this, right? You can't just pretend it doesn't exist. So for me, I'm seeing this every day as a critical item.
I agree.
All right. On the third question here, third-party access to data. We talked about this a little bit last time. And this is, where is this one? I'm trying to find it.
Pages 4 and 5, looks like.
There you go. Yep. Okay, perfect. Thank you. So it kind of goes, it is part of what we've been talking about with privacy considerations, but it's also part of the protections for data outside the HIPAA framework. And federal policy, yeah. Okay, all right. So basically, you know, if we're looking at this, I'll read this one. The protections for data generated outside of HIPAA and then federal privacy laws. So lack of clear privacy protection for data not subject to HIPAA protections. Patients don't realize that data is not protected. You know, so we're thinking about increased the opportunity is increased transparency and patient education for businesses not covered under HIPAA. So a bunch of proposed recommendation activities, you know, identify educational approaches, technology mitigators, potential regulatory solutions, develop recommendations for additional steps for HHS, review consent policies for early adopters for SDOH, and those sorts of things. And so this kind of that, you know, intersection in the draft plan is that intersection of medical devices and health IT for data privacy and secondary uses of data. And I mean, this comes down to, there's been a lot of recent news about third-party access to data and what kind of notification is necessary to patients or not necessary to patients. And, you know, just because you follow HIPAA, does that, you know, relieve you of any ethical or other obligations that you should be doing around patient consent or notification or those sorts of things? So it's just this murky area that really needs to be cleaned up. And I mean, every day, and I'm sure Brett, you know, every day in your life, you're seeing how many vendors are trying to just vacuum up data. That's like their entire existence right now is like, give me all your data. It's like, no. So you know, to the degree of it, this and then some, to me, is not just immediate, but like super immediate. What do you all think?
Well, I 100% agree with you, Aaron, and I think with ONC's push to put the chart on your smartphone to boil it down into a sentence, there has to be a robust understanding of your privacy, what you're giving up with that and what you still have.
Right. I'll give you a real-world example. I literally had a patient the other day ask one of my clinical clinicians in their clinic to say if they could put their information into this smartphone app that no one had ever heard of before. And it wasn't an API required or whatever, but he was simply going to just like look like shoulder surf the physician and type in like his vitals or whatever, you know, that was just taken into this app. And the doctor was like, sure, it's your information, but what are you putting it into? What is that app? And they, you know, said some name and it was this really kooky, like, okay, you know, it's your data, you know, be aware of the risks, but it's, you know, you do what you wish with it. But at some point, there's got to be an awareness as to what's the reconciliation if that third party, if that app on that patient's phone decides to go sell their data or weaponize it in some way, what's the recourse for the patient, you know, and then what's the liability to the health system? So there's a lot of that stuff that's going on that it's just really like unknown.
Yeah, and some of that stuff just goes way beyond what the health system can take responsibility for. You know, people are going to sometimes come up with apps that are bizarre that haven't been heard of or are not familiar regionally or locally. And I think we as HITACH can continue to promote the resources that are available to help people understand, you know, the things that HITACH has developed or ONC has developed in the past. And continue to look at activities that raise awareness. But there's a point where you can't take responsibility for someone else's decisions.
Right. And what's the recourse to the patient, right? Do they contact the FTC? Do they contact the OCR? I mean, who, you know, the FDA? I mean, how do you, you know, what's the roadmap for that, right? There's like there's no better business bureau for health apps that I'm aware of. So it's just interesting. You're in this really murky space.
Oh, you're absolutely right.
I was going to save this for what's missing on the chart, but I think it ties into this conversation. I think we've got something another bigger area that we need to put some more attention on. When I was reviewing this, I'm going to go off topic and then come back, but when I was reviewing the just grid of what's missing and not missing, I noticed that there's no another call coming in. Sorry about that. I noticed that there was not an area on here that really looks at the kind of patient access and choice and kind of needs of the patient. So I know I've mentioned in the past the need for kind of this concept of a consumer type hub where a patient can come in and access all of their information. And Tim's actually in their comments on TEFCA pointed to the need for a patient facing QHIN. The industry is not quite ready for that, I don't think, from some of the conversations I've had, but I think people are more and more interested in it conceptually. So in thinking through this and kind of a lot of the topics that we have on here on privacy and security and HIPAA, and Aaron, you just mentioned what's the roadmap for this, I think that one area that we could look at expanding is looking at the work that was done previously by ONC and the previous committee, I think it was the policy committee, and Carolyn, I think you actually helped with this, but they've got the patient engagement framework. I think one thing that we could do is recommend kind of a revamp on that with these growing needs, especially with the app ecosystem and patient access and patients being able to, quote unquote, bring their own devices. Like, how is this really working in the industry? Every time we discuss these topics, it's kind of like the Wild West. And I think we really do need to tighten it up and come up with a roadmap and kind of a vision of where we are now, the gaps we see, and where we want to go to actually get to the point where patients can access their information when, where, and how they want it and aren't tied to a specific EHR or provider. And we're not there yet, but it would be nice to start looking at a strategy and the steps we need to take so that we can get there.
The first thought that comes into my head around that is maybe a work group that looks at how FDA, FTC, potentially FCC, DOJ approach these kind of issues and what the limits of their authority are to enforce, to make regulations, and look for gaps, and then see about HITECH helping or encouraging ONC to start doing some of that work with the other agencies. I think one thing that we keep running up against whenever there's a major breach or a big something is that it's not an area that's really owned by one agency. And so you kind of look at it and say, whose job is it? And it's really nobody's job, but everybody's affected. Maybe HITECH can be a leader in helping to clarify what the specific gaps are, not just the sort of sense of futility that things aren't working right, and be the go-between that brings some of those players to the table and start getting some really constructive ideas about how to go forward.
So almost using HITECH as a broker of conversation, basically?
A trusted broker, a shuttle diplomat, you know, kind of whatever we need to be. And I don't mean that in a negative connotation. I think that from agency perspectives, they have specific tasks that they have to do by law. They have certain limits in terms of their power. And in many instances, there's an under-resourcing situation. So people are reluctant to try to step out of their bounds and do things that could be useful, but where they really have no authority. But if there was another group that was kind of charged with taking issues on and looking at sort of general improvements in the health IT environment, which is what I see ONC ITAC being, you know, that might be a way to start getting things going where agencies aren't in that uncomfortable position of trying to be the one that gets the ball rolling.
Yep, that makes sense. Okay, so am I hearing right that we should include Christina's comments? We should leave this as a topic area, probably expand it even more so, and that we should also call out pieces that maybe would require industry or partnership, exactly to what Carolyn was saying. Am I synthesizing that correctly?
Works for me.
Works for me.
Okay.
Yeah, I like
Brent,
that.
Yeah, okay. Brent, is there anything here that we're missing? I mean, I know that if you think about in the course of care, and we had talked about, you know, AI and all this other stuff like that, but if we're talking about just data, right, is there anything else here, privacy and other, that you think from a patient care perspective really should be honed in on?
I don't think so. I think we've covered it pretty well. I spoke earlier just to the whole data correction piece, but
right.
Otherwise, I can't think of anything else.
Okay. Okay. All right. So then we have that question. Carolyn, am I missing any piece of this third-party access to health data? I think that was it. I want to make sure I ask the question in totality.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we will probably continue to see new permutations or new wrinkles to old problems going forward, but I think that we've got a good solid wraparound to start, and, you know, certainly our own visions will change as we get into the work.
Right. Okay. Are there any other topics that this group wants to talk about, or any other things specific that we should be thinking about? I think we've all talked about what's in the back of our head. I just want to make sure that we've grabbed all the thoughts.
Or anything else in the chart that we need to go through more or that we want to revisit?
Right. All right. Well, I think this was a good discussion. I really appreciate the thoughts, and there's a lot that we have to do as industry. I mean, it's going to be interesting. I think the next HITAC in general, I'm going to bring up the point, the more that we can do to make the various industry trade associations aware to get the word out to people of what's coming on the pipeline would be helpful. Because again, I truly think people are sleeping at the wheel right now in general and not aware of everything from information blocking to all the other regs that are coming out, including these topics as they are discussed and worked through and whatever comes of them. So education to the industry is key. It really is key. All right, Caroline, I'll turn it back to you if you want to take us to the next slide. I think we're going to finish up here soon.
Yeah, we're at public comments unless any last thoughts that anyone has about discussion points or other stuff we want to go through. Are we too far ahead of schedule, Lauren, or are we able to do a public comment now?
We're a little bit ahead, but we can do public comment, give folks a minute to dial in.
Okay.
And then we can wrap up. So, operator, at this time, can we open the public line?
Yes, thank you. To ask a public comment today, please press star 1 from your telephone keypad. To remove your public comment, you may press star 2.
And do we have anyone in the queue at this time?
No one in queue at this time.
Okay. We'll leave the number up for a minute or two. I'll turn it back to you, Carolyn and Aaron, or Michelle, if you have anything else before we adjourn.
Well, actually, that's a good point. Michelle, is there any other questions here that we talked about yesterday that my mind is just maybe blanking on, or did we get everything that we need to continue working? Because I know that time is getting shorter and that we want to be as concise as possible and respectful of folks' times. Is there any other outstanding question that you had noted from your notes?
I think you guys did a great job of covering everything that's key at the moment in the crosswalk chart. And next we'll be turning to an actual draft. So I think that's where we'll continue to work out any concerns and any details. So
groovy.
I think we're on track.
Groovy. Thank you very much. Carolyn, anything from you, ma'am?
Just wondering if Michelle has anything that she would like the work group members to be thinking about or working on before the next meeting.
Good point. I was thinking during this meeting maybe we'd iterate one more time on this crosswalk through email, and then we'll be getting the draft report to all of you before the next meeting. So those are the two things. You'd want to review the crosswalk changes again and then look at the draft report when it arrives.
Sounds good.
And Michelle, are we still trying to circle up and see if there's maybe a time during the next in-person high tech this group meets, or are we still working through that?
Yeah, well, we'll need to come to you all and start planning meetings for the new year and maybe try to get together during the next high tech in-person meeting if possible.
Groovy. All righty. Any other final thoughts from the group or anything anybody wants to say?
Just check again, operator, any public comments?
No comments at this time.
Okay. With that, we will adjourn, and I believe the next work group meeting will be December 13th.
Fantastic.
Great.
Bye, everyone.
Thank you.
Bye, everyone. Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Bye-bye.
Ciao.